Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. You're joining episode number 66, where we're specifically going to be covering Twitch's ad incentive program and why our rates so bad in February. Streamers across the country, across the world, are seeing really bad ad incentive rates in February. And Ben and I are going to discuss exactly why that is.
Yeah, this is Twitch's new program where streamers can opt into a certain guaranteed amount of money by running ads during the month, which had really good reception when it first got installed last year, but it's had some not so good adjustments to it over the past couple of months, Pete, especially this last month, which has caused a lot of issues for people on Twitter and Reddit and people speaking out about it.
We're going to start the conversation this week by jumping in and talking about why AI is already shaking up streaming in 2023.
I feel like AI is going to shape up the year and the meta and streaming, and it seems like it already is. One of the stories that I saw come out over the past week was of a streamer. It's an AI streamer, and there are apparently a couple of these now. It's not the first one that's been done, but this one, I think the name was Neurosama on Twitch, which to my understanding is a completely automated stream. Like, it's a VTuber type stream, and the streamer themselves is actually completely run by AI, talking to chat, interacting with people who are following, things like that. And it's just completely running by itself. But that actual channel got banned over the last week on Twitch because of some of the stuff it was saying to viewers, which is really interesting. I feel like there's a lot of talk right now about how streaming or how AI is replacing artists and things like that. But I feel like streaming and video creation is coming soon too. And this is kind of the first that I've seen in the news of that. So Pete, any thoughts on seeing this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll bring up the screen share of the actual tweet that you saw. So this is effectively like a VTuber, but the VTuber is completely run by AI. So the words that it says, how it responds to the chat, all of that is through artificial intelligence. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. It's completely automated, which is wild. There's no, you know, we've seen some VTubers in the past who've gotten some flack for just the VTuber concept and things like that, but I was still a person behind the camera. This one is completely, you know, the speech, the movements, everything is by AI, which is wild. And one really interesting thing about this is you can't really tell from a viewer's perspective right away that it is an AI. So that's kind of a weird feeling if you come to a stream and then maybe it's an AI and you don't even realize that. That's going to be interesting to see over the, as this gets better and better, Pete. I think this, at least for the first few years, will be pretty interesting to watch.
I just see this as being a bit of a fad though. Like, I can't realistically see people wanting to watch AI streamers, or maybe there'll be one popular one, but I can't see it being, you know, hundreds of AI streamers flooding the category. But I do remember listening to, I can't remember which podcast it was, but it was some creator-based podcast where they were talking about how there was now virtual creators effectively, where an agency would run an influencer's account of this virtual person, and, you know, releasing photos, and they could be anywhere in the world at the same time. They could be working on multiple projects because it was a whole team behind this virtual influencer. So maybe we'll see artificial intelligence streamers taking off, but I personally I don't see it just yet. I think there's a lot of viewership for this one because it's unique, and like people are trying to force her to say, or the AI to say, things that are going to get her banned or get her canceled by the looks of it.
Yeah, I agree that it's kind of, it's going to be weird to watch, because I think there will be a fad phase where it's just interesting to see an AI stream. But it'll be weird to watch as things get better and better. And at some point, it may be indistinguishable a little bit from real streamers. This could be a ways down the road. But I think it'll be interesting, because to your point, like, if you have an AI and you're a brand or something, then you have a streamer who's not going to get canceled or say things that you don't want to say, who never has to sleep and can stream 24/7. There's a lot of weird things you start thinking about this space that AI can do that streamers can't.
Yeah, and you've also found a couple of examples of people doing some sort of deepfakes through streaming. Do you want to talk through these two clips, and I'll show them on stream?
Yeah, this one's weird, and I'll try and describe it the best I can for the listeners on here. This I just saw as one of the most trending discussions on live stream fail. But the clip is of a streamer, Nim, who's doing a face deep fake and some interesting dancing as Keanu Reeves. And it looks very much like Keanu Reeves' face. It's a really, really good deep fake. it took me a second to realize what I was even watching for a sec there. There's a second one too of someone doing Emma Watson, who looks very, very similar. And this is not like some of the bad deepfakes you've seen where it's pretty obvious that like there's some weird facial pixelation and things like that. It's pretty clean from my opinion, Pete. And this can be really interesting if we see this come into more streamers as an accessible software. I actually don't know what the software was that they're using, but just the clarity of it was really surprising to me.
I feel like this has to be something NVIDIA has built, or some SDK that makes use of NVIDIA's technology. It's when you actually sent me this first clip of, I just thought that Nim had gotten buff and, you know, shaved very nicely. I did not realize that this was a deep fake. Like, that's how good it is. And the fact that this is whilst live stream, like, this isn't usually when I'm watching anything to do with deep fakes, it's to do with thousands of hours of computation that has to go in to make it look even close to realistic. So the fact that this is happening live, I mean, the future is here and it's kind of scary. We're gonna live in a world where no one's really sure if somebody did say something or if it's just been deep faked. I think a lot of people have been worried about that, but it seems to be closer than ever if you can now do it on live content. So yeah, AI is taking over already. Only 3 weeks into the year and we're seeing examples like that. Next up, we're going to talk a little bit about something that maybe we wouldn't normally cover on this podcast, but something that we both noticed over the past week is big changes in the League of Legends viewership, which is a really old game. And this is partly to do with the fact that a new patch came out, but really it's to do with collaboration. And we've talked about collaboration of streamers in the past. We saw games like Among Us, Fall Guys really blow up when streamers work together to combine viewership and sort of make some kind of gimmick out of streaming together. And that's exactly what the League of Legends top streamers, both in EU and NA, have done for the new patch release, which is to make sort of a leaderboard. In the EU, at least, it's a 2-week challenge to see who can finish the highest rank. But this has caused a massive spike in viewership. If you look at, I've got Silly Gnome here, which I can share on screen. You can see the day that this started, a massive spike. And even from the days past, we're seeing much increased viewership compared to the previous weeks or even the previous years, really. And I just wanted to highlight this as what can be done in terms of collaboration. This is just purely something that a few streamers have banded together. The stakes that they've set, I think, are 500 gifted subs that they all contribute to the person that finishes the highest ranked after 2 weeks. So the stakes are there. There's a storyline there. There's competitiveness there. And all of the channels that are participating are seeing the growth. So yeah, just something I wanted to highlight, Ben. Any thoughts on this? What was the American version of this? It wasn't the 2-week window, was it?
Yeah, theirs was just a race to basically the top rank in the server. So, but it was interesting that there was a North American one and a Europe one at the same time. And I don't think they were planned to be together. It just kind of happened that way. I just, you know, obviously Pete and I are into League, so we were following some of this throughout the last week. But the whole idea is really interesting because you can kind of take this concept to any ranked game in a sense and use that. And it was all, like I was telling Pete, I think that the streamers actually did so much to boost the hype and viewership for this game more so than the devs did, like on Riot side. So this kind of thing could happen with Valorant, Apex, Overwatch, you know, any of those types of things. And it shows how crazy the entire category can get boosted when all the streamers are doing something together, whether it's, you know, American, European, or anywhere, any language, stuff like that.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Valorant, actually. That reminded me that I think last night there was a Ludwig and Tarek put on a Valorant LAN event, which was just like a community LAN, like one team versus the other, 5v5, and that saw increased viewership as well. I don't know if that will stick around in the Valorant category, but certainly these events that streamers are making are a great way to grow audiences between you or individually. Right, let's move on to some platform news. I think the first platform we're going to cover is Twitter, because Elon, again, is making changes. I'm not happy with this one specifically. They're kind of making Twitter more like TikTok. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily fair, but now if you open up Twitter, certainly on iOS, Ben, you're going to have to cover the Android side. You now have a For You page, which is the algorithm, and that's the default. It doesn't matter if you try and change to the other page, which is the latest tweets page. It always opens the app with the For You page, which is the algorithm-based one. So, yeah. Algorithms are taking over. They think they know the content that you want to see better than you do. I love seeing latest tweets first. That's just how I like to browse Twitter. And it seems like they're pushing hard to make sure that it's the For You discoverability first.
Yeah, this is interesting because, so first point, I don't have it on Android. Maybe if anyone else here has Android and has it, I'd love to hear that. So I've not experienced it myself yet, but I actually kind of like the idea of this if it's similar to what TikTok has done, because I think TikTok's For You is actually pretty interesting in showing you, especially showing you new content. Now, Twitter is different type of content than TikTok, and maybe it's better to see the stuff that you already follow. Also, it's been around for a lot longer, right? So you're more likely to have accounts that you follow and want to see versus new stuff. But the idea seems really cool, especially for encouraging people to want to make new content on Twitter if they know it'll hit a wider audience. Because it's pretty hard to grow a Twitter account in some ways versus like what TikTok does, just trying to serve any sort of new content to members and see if they receive it. So I'm open to it. But Pete, have you actually tried out this experience?
Yeah, I mean, this is what the default experience is on iOS, certainly for me in the UK now. And I mean, it's not a massive deal breaker. It's one swipe to get to the page that I like to see. But previous to this, you used to be able to set your homepage to either be algorithm-based or latest tweets. And because I always like to see it latest tweets, because for me, Twitter is like the breaking news. Like that's where people go to get what is happening right now. And so I just don't like the... I understand that like maybe some people don't check Twitter as much as I do, and then they want to just go on once a day and see like the top recommended things in a few swipes, whereas I like to see everything that's in my following feed all day long and never miss a tweet. So maybe I'm the problem here, but we'll see. There is actually a little screenshot on the left-hand side that we're sharing on the screen now to show you the two different tabs that you see. This isn't too much of a deal breaker. I think the worst Twitter update that we have to share this week is that they're blocking third-party clients. So popular ones like Tweetbot, Twitterific, but even their owned tweet deck, which they bought and have supported for years, Twitter has supported for years, which is like an advanced version of Twitter where you can have multiple different homepages. Even that isn't working correctly. Now, they've blocked actual clients, so people that have used these third-party Twitter apps like Tweetbot and Twitterific can't be used right now, and Twitter haven't said anything about it. TweetDeck still works, but you can't set it as latest tweets, which you used to be able to do. It's just the algorithm. Even if you set it to latest tweets, it still shows you the suggested feed. And some journalists have uncovered some internal Slack messages from this, where I'll just highlight this on screen. They found a senior software engineer saying third-party app suspensions are intentional. So this sounds like something that has come down from the top, probably from Elon Musk. They want less people using third-party apps. They want to get everybody on Twitter, probably because they want to serve ads. And right now, I think the API, like all these apps that we're using the Twitter API, could not choose to display any kind of ads, and Twitter wants to make money. That's my opinion on it, Ben. It's definitely a negative because a lot of people were using these apps and feel kind of bad for the developers that have probably spent decades building these apps since Twitter's been around for so long.
Yeah, that's a weird decision, especially TweetDeck. I didn't realize that was included in here, but that one is really built into Twitter, so I'm surprised they kind of cut that off. I think you're right in saying that this was probably made from the top down to try and get more people onto the actual Twitter app so that they can say they have, you know, X number, many more active users on the app, X many more downloads to advertisers to get them to spend money on the platform, which I get the idea, but it seems like this probably isn't the best way to do that long term. It might be helpful a little bit short term, but it feels like people might just not use the Twitter app if they can't use one of the other ones. So I don't know. This is a weird choice to me because a lot of other social medias, like I know Reddit has many ways to use Reddit, right? You don't have to use their core app, and that works pretty well for them. So I'm kind of surprised they're forcing this, especially when a lot of these platforms, these apps have been around for years, like you said, and those people have been working out for over a decade now just have to change that whole model.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see the use case from their point of view. They want people to be using their built experience, but I feel like this is just going to drive more people away from Twitter. Like people are very specific about their apps, and if those apps get killed off without even just introducing better functionality on the website that you can't get on the apps, that's the better way of doing it. But anyway, Elon kind of determined to kill off Twitter, it seems. hopefully a new CEO steps up at some point and keeps this platform alive, because I love it. It's one of my favorite platforms to use. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but certainly killing off third-party apps that people are using isn't the best way to go about making sure people keep using it. From bad news to more bad news, we've seen more layoffs in the gaming and streaming space. And this is something that's kind of tech-wide. We've seen, you know, Facebook and Amazon and Twitch, and I don't know if YouTube or Google have, but pretty much every tech platform has been making some employees redundant after the cost of living crisis and recession coming in. But two pretty major players in the streaming space, Stream Elements and 100 Thieves, have both laid off part of their team. Stream Elements actually laid off 20% of their team, which is the second time that's happened in 7 months. And I think that's 40 people. So our condolences to anybody that's been working at Stream Elements and has lost their job. But we're kind of seeing this return back to the working way, aren't we, really? These companies raise a lot of money, $100 million in funding that Stream Elements had, but now laying off more of their workforce. And I think on the 100 Thieves side, I've lost the report here from Jacob Wolf, 30 employees were laid off. That's obviously more esports focused than necessarily anything to do with live streaming. But it looked like even some higher level employees were laid off from 100 Thieves. Have you seen any of this from the industry side that you work in, Ben? Is it common across the board?
Definitely. I think it's probably it's kind of like the response to what happened during COVID, right? When a lot of there was a ton of openings for jobs in tech, especially when everything was online and there was so much demand for all sorts of tech and just streaming boom, right? So there's a lot of hiring happening then, and now it's kind of the fallout of that as we're kind of into this period in 2023. So it's unfortunate. Some of these surprised me for sure. I know like 100 Thieves, that seems to me like one of the strongest esports org, especially at least in North America, compared to a lot of the other teams out there. So I was surprised that they were the ones that went in the headlines. And to your point, a lot of the people who were removed seemed like pretty high profile people within the org, or people have been there for a long time. And I made a lot of the like the video producer and things like that had made a lot of stuff that was a big part of the brand. So that was interesting. It just kind of shows that like no industry is really can avoid this in a way. It's going to hit everything with the economy. And so esports and streaming is unfortunately one of those areas too.
Well, let's just hope that the topic that we cover later will keep some people that are self-employed through live streaming, keep them earning money, because certainly doesn't look that way from Twitch's ad incentive program. Anyway, a quick PSA. I've seen OBS tweet about this a few times over the past week, so I want to do my bit. Anybody listening to this podcast that has recently downloaded OBS Studio, please go to obsproject.com. Do not click on the ad results on Google, because there are companies that are hosting fake versions of OBS with malware or viruses inside in the ad spaces of people searching on Google for OBS Studio. Now, this is something that Google needs to get on top of, and I think it's not exclusive to OBS Studio. There's people that have downloaded various different bits of software, and these companies are targeting those apps, people that are downloading them. But they make the website look very convincing. You can see even from the screenshot that they share, the website is obs-studio.com. Or at least that's what's showing in the ad. So go to obsproject.com, go to GitHub, find the actual OBS Studio repo, then you know you're getting the real software. And if you do think that you've clicked on one of these in the past few weeks, then make sure that you run virus scans, malware scans, those kind of things. Make sure that you're using actual version of OBS, not something like this. I don't really know what can be done about this other than reporting the ads. It kind of makes me think that we should just encourage everybody to use an ad blocker, which is a really bad thing to be encouraging when the majority of my business is people watching ads before YouTube videos. But when the ad can literally cause you to not get the software you want and, you know, be a security risk for you, then it seems like a no-brainer to me, Ben.
Yeah, this is unfortunate. I know this has happened in the past too. I'm really surprised they can get those up with paid ads, to be honest. I guess it's just an open system, right? So a lot of these slip through, and they probably have multiple accounts creating these links. But it's just unfortunate that people are trying to take advantage of this, especially OBS, right, which is an open source platform. Like, they really don't make money off of OBS just from giving out the software. So it sucks that scammers are targeting this of all things. But yeah, just be careful. And especially just be careful clicking on ad links in Google in general. Because it's not just this. I mean, OBS is one example, but I'm sure there's lots of other things that are being targeted like this on Google.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. You found us some YouTube news, Ben. Finally, some positive news after like three or four things that are warning people. you've seen something about our stream data being added to the dashboard. You want to take us through that?
Yeah, this one's really simple. I tried to find, it was pretty light on news for updates this week on the platforms, but there was one from YouTube where now you can see your hours streamed in your YouTube analytics, which is nice. This feels like a pretty basic feature. And I think, so Jeffrey Greller, who's from YouTube, even said it was very overdue from their side, but now you can finally see it. I think Ludwig had even talked about the fact that he couldn't see his hours streamed for a while. So now you can, which is pretty cool if you're a YouTube streamer and you want to track that for any reason. It seems like there's some other stuff they're working on too. But yeah, just a small update, which is kind of nice if you do happen to live stream on YouTube at the same time.
And then something else that you found about Shorts, and this is Android side only, right?
Yeah, this one I think technically came out last month, but they also announced it in the Creator Insider this week. So right now, they talked about the fact that they want to do a better job of having thumbnail support for Shorts on YouTube, which is pretty important for YouTube because unlike TikTok, you can see the short displayed to you as you're browsing the site and choose to click into it, versus on TikTok, you're pretty much just getting stuff served to you constantly. So thumbnails are pretty important, but you can't really upload them right now, except starting now, if you have an Android phone, so luckily I have that, you can actually choose a frame of your short to use for the thumbnail during the upload only. So it's not perfect because it's only Android, only mobile, and you can only do it during the upload. So like all those shorts you've done in the past, you can't go set a thumbnail for those, unfortunately. But if you do have an Android, I would definitely recommend trying to upload from there in the future, because being able to choose a thumbnail for the short is very helpful. And I actually tested it by having, I used the same video twice. One was just the auto-generated thumbnail, and one was one that I picked out specifically, and the one that I picked out did a lot better. So it is nice, still kind of limited, and they said they're going to work on ways to offer this to more platforms, right? Not just Android, but this is the first update we've seen on that so far, Pete.
Keen to hear your thoughts, Ben. Do you think they should be having completely custom thumbnails, or is that just a waste of time from a creator's point of view? Is just picking one of the frames from the video enough?
Yeah, I think it's kind of annoying to make a short thumbnail, to be honest. I mean, there probably is the market for it to a degree. I kind of liked being able to just pick a still from the video, although there's probably people who would try to put like a specific still in the video, right? They like slip a little thumbnail somewhere in the video and just select that. But I don't know. It seems like it should be less important probably to have a really polished thumbnail on a short versus a full-fledged YouTube video, especially because TikTok doesn't have thumbnail importance in that way. So you're really just creating it for TikTok, I mean, for YouTube, whereas the short itself can go everywhere. So it feels like kind of a waste of time to just do that for YouTube.
Yeah. You are our resident vertical platform guru, so I'm always going to ask you questions like that, you know, get your opinion, because especially the differences that you've seen. I actually saw a tweet, we haven't pulled it up here, but I saw a tweet this week from somebody at YouTube talking about the specific games that are performing better in YouTube Shorts than on TikTok. And if I remember rightly, it was games like Apex, Tarkov, and I don't know what the actual link there is. I imagine it's to do with which countries are more popular for YouTube Shorts versus TikTok, and then which games are more popular in certain countries. So the viewership is there on YouTube. But super interesting. I think the one great thing I love about the fact that there's competition between TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, is that people can upload the same video to all three and then build conclusions from that, which, I mean, you can't really do that with YouTube. I guess some people might have done that with Vimeo and uploaded to YouTube and Vimeo, but the competition isn't there. So being able to actually upload the exact same content to three different platforms, experimenting with which performs the best, what thumbnails, titles perform the best. You can almost do some A-B tests just on the three different platforms. So that's one thing that I really like about it. Let's move on to talking about Twitch. And before we get onto the ad incentive programs, we first have a little update to some chat history feature that was, I think, first leaked or talked about back in 2021. And now it seems to be rolling out to more and more users. Do you want to cover this one, Ben, or shall I keep going on it?
Yeah, I can jump in this one. So this is another one that wasn't officially announced really from Twitch, but a nice little change. So now for some users, I think he said about 40% of users, if you go into a stream, you can now see a history of the chat that's been in there before you joined the stream. I actually have this on my account. I didn't realize it was a limited feature, Pete, on certain Twitch accounts. But I think this is a very big change if it's not default, especially for smaller streamers. Because if you have a slower chat or something, that's not going to be as active as the, you know, the super top streamers where the chat is constantly moving. And a new viewer comes into your stream, if they see a full chat window of activity happening, then that's way more appealing than coming into a stream and seeing just nothing in chat. So even though, you know, it's stuff that happened in the past, it still looks like a more engaging stream. I would just be careful not to have a bunch of bot spam in there from the past couple hours. But I think this is really good for like the small to mid-sized creator of making it for feel more appealing. So I'm excited to see this.
Yeah, this is a PSA to make sure that you set all of your bots to not post unless there's been like five different chat messages, because there's nothing worse than somebody coming to your stream, the chat history being enabled for them, and then them seeing the same, like, check out my YouTube, check out my Twitter, check out my TikTok in the chat history. You actually want some real chat in there in between. But yeah, I think it's a good feature. I think YouTube already does this. I should have probably checked before going live, but I think when you join a live stream, you can scroll back and see the chat throughout, because you can obviously rewind the live stream on YouTube, which you can't really properly do yet on Twitch. But yeah, I think it's a good feature. I hope they roll out to everybody. I don't see a reason why not to. Can't be that difficult technically to implement either. Let's move on to the main topic, Ben, and that is talking about the ad incentives for February. So do you want to just give a brief description to those watching and listening what the ad incentive program is? Because not everybody is an affiliate or a partner or a streamer on Twitch. So it'd be good to give a quick breakdown as to exactly what that feature is.
Yeah, we've talked about this, I think, in the podcast a couple times last year. But this is a program on Twitch that they recently added, where if you're a partner on Twitch, you have the option to opt into a set payout for you to get each month based on agreeing to running a certain number of ads per hour and then also streaming for a certain number of hours during the month. So for example, like run 1 minute of ads per hour and then stream for 80 hours during the month, and you'll get this much money guaranteed, which is a cool program overall. For a lot of people, especially when it started, there were some really good payouts for people. But over time, it seems like there's been some weird adjustments to the payouts that people are getting and also how many ads people have to run during the hour. That makes it a little bit less appealing. And Pete, I think that kind of came to a head this month, especially when people saw the offers they were getting in January and even December.
And this is on top of the money that you actually make on the ad. So this is just the incentive to be running this many ads and streaming this many hours. You get this as sort of a bonus payment. So yeah, loads of people over on streamer Twitter have been sharing their deals. I think it's great that streamers are like sharing their deals, because it gives people like me that are interested like loads of data to see how big that streamer is and what kind of ad incentives they get. So I'm all for it. Keep sharing, keep talking about money. It empowers everybody. But yeah, loads of different streamers sharing basically that half the rates for February are half what they were for January. So tweet from Loco saying it was half. There's a tweet here from Matt's saying it's a third of last month. And these are streamers of different sizes. So this streamer, Simply Matthias, had an $839 incentive and now reduced to $437. Now, initially when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, oh, of course, it's because Q4, there's loads of ad spend, loads of companies going on Twitch, going on YouTube to spend money, putting adverts in front of streamers or people because they want them to buy their products in Black Friday sales, in Thanksgiving, in the lead up to Christmas. And then basically most companies don't have any marketing budget in Q1. They spend like 75% in Q4 and then the other 25% through the year. But January, typically on YouTube, certainly is really bad ad rates. And I was like, oh, it's just the difference between Q4 and Q1. But then thinking about it, these are the ad incentives for February. And people are talking about how it's 50% or 30% of what they were offered in January. So I would have thought January to December would have been a big drop off, never mind January to February. So I'm actually a little bit confused. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on this, Ben.
No, I think that's the first thing I thought of too, was the fact that there's historically such high, basically you're getting a lot more value from each ad essentially in December because of so much spend versus the new year after the holidays are over. But it seems like this was happening kind of even before the holidays too, Pete, from the graph that you have linked here as well. And it seems like it's affecting everyone kind of across the board. So I don't think it's just due to, you know, advertiser spend and that sort of thing, but maybe sort of like a concentrated effort from Twitch to kind of slowly step down the expectation. That's the feeling that I'm seeing from it.
I like the program in general, but yeah, if people are just using it as an opportunity to meme on Twitch, then it's not great marketing for them. The graph that you mentioned, yeah, Twitter user Captain Dandy Floss, looks like they're possibly a VTuber over on Twitch, has actually kept a log of all of the different ad incentive offers that they've had and accepted through the past 6+ months. And you can see there between January and February, there is a big drop off. Actually, between December and January, it's almost the exact same offer, but it's less than half for February. So yeah, maybe this is Twitch bringing back lower payouts. They're starting to scale it back now that the feature is launched, and maybe, you know, they haven't got the marketing budget that they had before. To me, it just looks like they're making it harder to make money on Twitch again. And I get they have to be a profitable business, but this is not doing them any positive PR, is it, Ben?
No, it's definitely not. I think this was the most talked about story, at least on streamer Twitter, over the last week. But they just really quickly showing that graph again, something to call out with that is that if you look at his tracking of each, basically the last 6 months over the course of his channel and his rates that he was getting, he got the most during August, actually, and then October. And then November and December were lower rates than those 2 months. So the thought that this is tied into holiday spend doesn't really track. Now, there's some stuff to do with the economy, maybe, but still, it doesn't really line up with how I would expect the CPMs to go during the holidays and everything. So I don't think it can be that. And the other thing that's weird too is looking at some of the examples we have here, Pete, I think the difference between running, you know, 2 versus 3 versus 4 minutes of ads per hour and the payouts people are getting is getting really small. So one person here was even getting like $1 extra to run an entire 1 minute ad more per 80 hours. So running 80 ads a month to get $1 more is pretty extreme. And I don't know if that's something that's just in their back end with the automated system or if they're really trying to constrain this more and just slowly decrease the rates overall. It could be a lot of things, but it just kind of stinks to see the program go this way.
We've got to also caveat all of this with we don't know what has happened to these streamers' streams. These could be examples of streamers that have declined in viewership, and then that might be part of the reason why their ad incentive program are being offered lower rates, because I think Twitch takes into account all of those different things, you know, chat activity, how many viewers you're getting from different countries that the advertisers are actually spending in to you know, they're not doing it manually. They're doing it with some automated system to give you an ad incentive for, you know, the 2, the 3, the 4 minutes per hour and the number of hours that you need to stream to actually hit the benchmark. So we don't have all the data. Annoyingly, I didn't do any streaming on Twitch, so I can't use any examples myself. But it does seem that it's common across any streamer. I haven't seen anyone posting that they've had an increase in an ad incentive between January and February anyway, unless you have, Ben.
I have not, no. Pretty much the same thing across the board. Especially a lot of streamers who've even grown over the course of the last couple months are still seeing declines. So I think it must be an indicator of how the program overall is going. There was some suspicion when this first came out and people were tracking the first few months because this was happening that Twitch had always kind of planned this. Maybe they wanted to make the first couple months really appealing to get people to use the platform, the program, and kind of get used to having that stable income, and then slowly just, you know, dial back the amount they're giving and increase the ads a little bit to get people to kind of still use it while making it more sustainable. So I don't know Twitch's numbers, if that is the actual case or not, but that is a possibility looking at this.
Do you see Twitch doing something similar for incentivizing streamers to stream longer, earn more subscribers as well? Because if they... It's basically a way of incentivizing streamers to stream for longer and to run ads. But they could also incentivize streamers to stream for longer and incentivize people to subscribe as well.
Yeah, potentially. I think this is kind of, I mean, that reminds me a lot of the partner contracts that people have back in the day that were, you know, you stream this number of hours for agreement to be partnered for this amount of time. I think they're moving away from that a little bit. But I think that was why they had that in the past, was to try and really milk the subscribers for the top streamers. So it could happen, but seeing the reception of this program so far, I don't know if they'd want to try and do that again.
Yeah, it just seems to me that the whole ads program on Twitch just needs a bit of a revamp. And I get that it's a more difficult sell than it is on YouTube, where videos exist forever and they can sell ads at the click of a finger. You know, somebody goes to watch a Gaming Careers YouTube video, that ad gets sold in the split second right before somebody watches it. So it's a much more automated system. Twitch being live, it's more difficult. I've seen some streamers taking this a bit more seriously than in the past, though. You know, running ads whenever they get back into a queue, and just making sure that they keep the buffer filled so that people that join the stream don't get an ad as soon as they start playing. It seems like the education around ads is getting there, but maybe, you know, the incentive from Twitch just isn't there yet. Well, that is it. That is all the news that we've got to cover this week. It is a bit of a shorter podcast. We've been going for just over 35 minutes here, but not too much to cover. We want to obviously bring you an episode every week. And I think this Twitch incentive stuff, it's been pretty talked about all over Twitter. So it's worth discussing on the podcast and hearing your guys' thoughts as well. Yeah, we'll be back next week. As always, thanks everybody for watching that's watched along live, and anybody that watches the VOD after the fact. We do this show live every single Monday. You're going to have to help me with the time zones here, Ben. It's 9 p.m. GMT. What time is it your time? 4 p.m.?
4 p.m. Eastern. Yep. And then 1 p.m. Pacific.
There you
go. That should be all the time zones.
Ben doing all the time zone work for us. Yeah, come and watch it live at some point, because it's great to be able to interact with everybody in chat. And for all the people listening on the podcast, thank you very much for listening. We do this show live, or if you ever want to see any of the examples that we talk about, check out the YouTube video. It's all on the Gaming Careers YouTube channel. There is now a live tab where you can see all the previous live streams, which is just all of the podcasts that we do here on YouTube. So thanks everyone for watching. Hope you have a great week streaming, and we'll catch you next week. Peace.
Thanks all.